You're listening to 3 and 30, Episode 13, How to Support Those Who Are Grieving. Welcome to 3 and 30, a podcast for moms who want to create more meaning in motherhood. Each 30-minute episode will feature three doable takeaways for you to try at home with your family this week. I'm your host, Rachel Nielsen. Thank you so much for being here. If you close your eyes right now, I bet you can picture several of your friends, family, and loved ones who have lost their own precious loved ones. The circumstances surrounding these losses are often varied, but always heartbreaking. And one thing is universal. That's the grief. Because when you love big, you grieve big. And there's just no way around that. Seeing your friends and family grieving can be its own kind of agony, as you ache to do something, anything, to show them your love and to help ease their burden a little bit. But what? What can you possibly do or say? I get asked this question a lot because, as I shared in last week's episode, my mother passed away from breast cancer when I was 19. So my friends often turn to me when someone that they love loses a loved one to ask what they should do. How can they help? And that's why a post on Instagram caught my eye last month. I've been following the account of Rachel Gaynor for several months because she's an advocate for body positivity and she's a mindset coach who, like me, has been through her own journey with perfectionism and eating disorders. Also like me, she's an adoptive mom. She has adopted 5 beautiful children. And so I just feel connected to her and I love her genuine and heartfelt content that she shares on her feed. And one day in December, she posted on Instagram about how the holidays can be a tender time for people who have lost a child. She shared a little bit about her angel baby, Daphne, who passed away when she was just 2 months old. Rachel then went on to share 3 practical ways that you can support someone who's grieving. And every single one of her ideas was just spot on with the experiences that I've had with loss in my life. So I reached out to her and asked if she wanted to record a podcast on this topic, and I'm thrilled that she agreed to do so. I can't wait to talk to her more about how to support our friends and family when they're grieving, and I'd like to welcome to the podcast Rachel Gaynor. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I know that I just introduced you a little bit already, but I wanted to start off asking you to tell us about your work and your passion for working with women.
Sure. So I am a personal trainer and mindset coach with a heavy emphasis on helping women deal with the things that they're struggling with on the inside, the mental barriers to their wellness. And then we work a lot on body positivity, perfectionism, like you mentioned, and just an overall sense of self-care and kind of how that leads into a lifetime of wellness and builds personal respect and self-love over time.
Well, I want you to know that your work is amazingly important. If anybody listen to my episode last week. It was called How to Stop Being Mean to Yourself. And it talks about how I spent about a decade just being so mean and such a perfectionist to myself and developed eating disorders and a bad relationship with my body. And it would have made such a difference to me to have someone like you in my life to mentor me. And so I really want to thank you for the work that you're doing with that. And the podcast that we're recording today about how to support those who are grieving in some ways seems to be a little bit outside the scope of your regular content, which is more about your role as a personal trainer and a mindset coach. But really, since I've been following you for a while, I realized that I don't think it's that different from your regular content because your own journey to self-love and a greater love for your body and a greater understanding of your divine purpose, that really began after your daughter's death. Is that right?
Absolutely. They're just intimately intertwined. You know, before before my daughter, I was just very much of a perfectionist. I was a people pleaser. I just really thrived off of taking care of other people, meeting other people's expectations, and just I kind of wore perfectionism as a badge of honor. And after she passed away, I just, so many of the things that had driven me before just didn't drive me anymore. And I really lost, I'd kind of committed, Daphne was born with a heart defect. And so I'd kind of, when we adopted her, I just kind of took that on as my purpose to take care of her, and that she would be my purpose. And when she passed away a short time after we adopted her, my whole sense of self just was lost. I just dissolved. Everything that I had felt about myself and valued in myself, it was just kind of lost in the grief.
Mm-hmm. And also, it sounds like in the realization that a lot of it didn't actually matter, a lot of the superficial stuff that had mattered to you before didn't actually matter. So it's kind of like, how do I find myself now? And where should I put all my energies and passions? Would you say that's true?
I would say that's true. That there was definitely that sense of, that kind of came later as I started to try and pick up the pieces. I kind of build that sense of self again. I started to realize that things that I had cared about before in terms of my worth and my value, that they really weren't important. But I don't know that that initially was my driver. Initially, I was just so lost. Mm-hmm. I just felt such a sense of loss of self that the way that I usually describe it is that I felt that there were kind of two me's, and there was the me that was going about my daily life and trying to survive, and I was sort of robotic. And then there was the me that was curled up in the fetal position inside my body that was just all the best things about me. And I was just so broken that that was the place that I was hiding. And it was really, I had to reconnect with the parts of me that I wanted to bring back, which took time. And I had to let go of the parts of me and the things that didn't matter to me anymore, like the approval of other people. But that really did, it was a long process for sure. And that's a lot of where the things that I teach came from, is from that journey of completely losing myself, having it kind of taken from me and having to rebuild in a completely new way. And there's so much of the old me that has resurfaced in a similar but totally new way. And there are parts of me that just have disappeared completely. And I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. So in the midst of all of that pain and grief, which I can't even imagine going through, what did people do for you that was helpful? Which leads us into our three takeaways. What is your first takeaway about how to support someone who has lost a loved one?
Okay, so the very first thing that I would say is reach out. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, the day after it happens, or you learn about it 5-6 months in the future. Just reach out and let the person know that you have heard about what's happened, that you want to express sympathy, and just show your love. And don't let a timeline scare you. I think a lot of people, they didn't reach out in the first week, or they didn't make it to the funeral, and so now they feel awkward and they don't know what to say, and it feels really uncomfortable. But you can always say, you know, I'm sorry I didn't reach out initially, but I wanted to reach out now and just let you know I'm thinking about you. So there, it's never too late. Mm-hmm. That can come in the form of a text message, an email, a phone call. If you see them, you know, walking down the street, if you run into them at your church or out anywhere, I mean, don't confront them necessarily at a supermarket about their grief, but anywhere, just extending a hand of love is always appreciated. And there's a few things that I found that really go along with that. And one of those is to mention the child, or if it's not a child, the loved one by name. I'm so sorry, you know, I'm so sorry to hear about Daphne. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry to hear, you know, versus just a generic statement. But we get scared. I know that people get scared to use the name of the deceased. It can feel like a trigger, that you'll somehow trigger that person's grief. And you may. But the truth is that grief can be triggered by any number of things. And there's actually so much joy that I feel, and I know it's true for a lot of others, when someone mentions the name of your loved one, who asks you how you're feeling, or would you like to talk about Daphne? And another thing that I find super helpful, I know it's like a lot of pieces, but along with this is, the first year is just very difficult. So many milestones and so much hardship can come out of the first year. And so I find it really helpful when someone passes away to just open my phone, get out my calendar, mark that person's angel day on my calendar so that I'll remember the 1 year anniversary. And if it's someone who I'm close to, like a sibling or you know, a parent or something, I would put, you know, the 1 month mark, the 6 month mark, and just, or other things like Mother's Day or a child's birthday, or there's just a lot of things. Like if you think about it, like if, for example, a 4 year old passes away and they would be going into kindergarten that year, they're going to turn 5 and they're going to be going into kindergarten, it would be thoughtful to just in your phone mark, you know, touch base in September, right? So just be thoughtful about the times when you might reach out. And it can be a simple little text message, just, you know, I thought this, you know, this month might be a little difficult for you. I just wanted to check and see how you're doing.
Right.
Because those times really are challenging. And if you put a little thought into it and put that into your phone in advance, you'll actually really be able to support and help that person over the course of the first year, which is really the most intense grieving period. Mm-hmm. Although it continues on, but the first year is by far the most intense.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I've tried to do for my friends who've had miscarriages is to ask them when their due date would have been, if I'm close to them, and if it's comfortable when we're talking, say, well, when was your due date? And most women who've had miscarriages know that day, like they can tell you, right, specifically.
Absolutely.
And so I'll try to write it down, and I don't make a big deal of it right then, you know, to write it down, but I'll just make a mental note and write it down. And then on that day, I'll reach out and say, I'm just thinking about you today. I know today was your due date. And I've had several friends who've just been so touched, and like, today was a hard day and nobody even knows that today was
Absolutely.
A hard day, you know? So remembering those important dates and milestones, I think, is huge. And I also completely agree with what you said about using Daphne's name. And I also love, so my mom died when I was 19. And so a lot of people in my current life don't know her. In fact, my husband doesn't even know her. Mm-hmm. And so the people who do know her, it means so much to me when they share stories about her.
Oh, absolutely.
Or tell me like experiences that they had with her when I wasn't there. It's almost like they're giving me a new memory by sharing that experience, or telling me about how they saw her interact with me is really meaningful. Like my college roommate wrote me a letter for my freshman year, because my mom passed away in between my freshman and sophomore years of college. And she said, you know, I always loved seeing how excited and proud your mom was of you when she'd come to visit, and she would take all of us out to dinner, not just you, because she wanted to know your life. So she wanted to know your friends. And mm-hmm. I really admired that about your mom. And those little memories of her and how she loved me are just priceless to me. And have you had that
absolutely.
Experience with Daphne, with people who knew her?
Yeah, her life was so brief, mm-hmm. and we actually lived away from all of our family and friends for the first month of her life because she was in the hospital. So very, very few people got to meet her or spend time with her. And so, yes, the very few people who do remember her, remember holding her and spending time with her. I really treasure the things that they tell me. One of the things that always stands out to people is how luminous her eyes were. She had very wide, bright eyes. And, you know, a lot of babies don't focus super well, and they kind of have like a glassy look when they're newborns. But Daphne was not that way. She looked alert and clear and made eye contact right from the beginning. And people would always just talk about how it felt like she was like looking right into your soul, and that she knew you, and that she was very wise. Like, she was a very old soul. And it's this, I got that same story from so many people. And so it just brought so much clarity and joy to me, because that's how I saw her. And it was just wonderful to feel that that was reinforced by other people who had spent time with her.
Yes.
It definitely. And now even her life was brief, but I speak about her a lot, through my Instagram, public speaking, other opportunities. And so when I share her story and people come back to me and talk about how sharing that story touched their heart, that also gives me that same joy that her life was brief, but it was beautiful, and we can celebrate it even now.
Yeah, and it's like you're continuing to introduce her to people, even though she's gone. Mm-hmm. I know, I've just from following your Instagram, I feel like I love her. Like, I love the stories that you shared about her and the pictures. You're right about her eyes. And most recently, you shared that experience that you had with her shortly before she passed away, where you were prompted to just be present with her and lay on a blanket with her. And I read that and I was so touched, and it made me want to be a better mom. So she continues to bless lives.
Absolutely.
So, and then what is your second takeaway for how we can support those who are grieving?
So the second takeaway sort of builds a little bit on the first, and it's to offer a specific service. So often when someone loses a loved one, we express our sympathy and then we say, if there's anything I can do, let me know, which is a very nice gesture. But what happens when you're grieving is you truly can't even identify your needs.
Right.
Your emotions are strong and heavy, and you kind of just want to pull in a little bit from the world, and you may or may not want people with you, but you don't really know even what will serve you well. And so, I always tell people, you know, think of your specific talent or a service you can give, or a very meaningful gift, something that is unique to you, to what you have to offer, and offer that. So, would you like me to give some examples?
Yes, I would love
some different things.
Yes.
Okay. So a few of the things that I'll start with, some really specific things that were maybe bigger, and then I'll go more to some generalized things that were still very touching, but almost anybody could do. So, if you're very close to someone, you may be able to spot a need that's very specific. For example, my daughter passed away in the hospital, and very few people knew what was going on, but I had had to drop off my older daughter at my best friend's house in the middle of the night, in order to rush to the hospital to be with my daughter. And when my friend heard that she'd passed, she offered to go to my home and to just pick up the things that belonged to Daphne that were in our common area, like her baby swing and her diapers and her bottles, and to just put them away in Daphne's bedroom so that I wouldn't have to come home and do that myself. Now, I could have said, no, I want to do that myself, but it was a very kind and specific offer of a service that actually was so appreciated.
And thoughtful, very thoughtful.
It was so thoughtful and so specific. Mm-hmm. So that was something that was a very specific service. Another friend had a talent for hand lettering. And so she, after Daphne passed away, she took an E.E. Cummings poem that I loved. That she didn't know that actually she was, she found it, but it says, it's
I,
just,
is his, it I carry you in my heart.
I carry you in my heart.
I love that one too.
I carry your heart with me. I carry it in my heart. I am never without it. And she hand lettered that for me and framed it and then gifted that to me. So it's something I treasure and I still have up in my home because not only does it remind me of my daughter and her heart, but it also was such a precious gift, right? It was something offered with so much love. She put so much time into that gift. I had another friend who was a photographer and she, we were friends, but perhaps not like, she wasn't like a best friend, but she was a neighbor. And she was a photographer and she sent me just a text message and just said, I know you'll be dressing Daphne's body before the funeral. Would you like me to come take photos for you? And it was just such a kind offer because I would have never thought of that.
Right.
But it was my last moments with my daughter and she made this offer. And so it was something that was specific to her skill that she could give to me.
Right. And again, you may have said no, it may have been too personal and you may not have wanted that, but, you still would have appreciated the thoughtful offer of service and made out of love. I think people are so afraid they're going to say the wrong thing or offer the wrong thing, but
and that it will be offensive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's done in love, then even if the person says, no, I don't want that. It's not going to be offensive.
Absolutely not. The worst thing that happens is that I could have said, actually, I think we'd like to be alone. And I think I even said to her, you know, let me think about that. I'm not sure if I feel comfortable having photos of that. And then I took a couple of days, but by the time that the funeral came, I told her I would love for you to be there and do this for me. Yeah. So, you know, give people time to make that decision, but putting it out there, I could not have asked somebody for that. Mm. I couldn't have known, but it was such a generous offer. Mm. So those are some really specific kinds of things, but then a couple of more general things that people did for me that almost anybody could do. There was a woman who ordered me a necklace with Daphne's name on it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then she gave that to me. That's a gift that I actually give quite often is a piece of jewelry with the child's name on it. And then one woman down the street brought me just a basket and it just had like puffs tissues and waterproof mascara in it. And just a thoughtful note about how she knew that the funeral would be difficult and she wanted to, you know, support me through that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what a simple gift. But to me, even though it was a small gift, it was such a generous offer because, again, she thought of the specific situation and she offered something specific.
Yes, I love that. And people who've listened to this podcast will know that about six weeks ago, we lost my son's birth mother. So my son's adopted and his birth mother passed away and it's been so hard. And I was also going to say that people have sent me jewelry, which I hadn't thought of before, but I have loved it. It's been so thoughtful. So on the podcast, I recorded 3 messages of hope for the darkest times. Mm-hmm. And I talked about Katie and I shared 3 scriptures that had helped me. And I had one friend send me a necklace that had the word joy on it from the scripture, Joy Comes in the Morning. And then another friend who sent me a bracelet that had the phrase Beauty for Ashes, which is what I talked about at Katie's funeral. And both of those gifts just meant so much to me. And so there's so many services now, like with Etsy and different things where you can get jewelry engraved. And just as simple as the name, I love that you can wear her name around with you.
Yes. And I had another friend, it was actually a couple of friends, they made a bracelet for me and then a matching bracelet for Daphne. And she was buried with that bracelet on.
I love that.
So, you know, it was just, just those little things that mm-hmm. help tie us to the people that we love.
Right. And I did want to mention one more idea that a friend of mine had that I thought was so beautiful. A friend of ours had a baby pass away who had never left the hospital. She'd been in the NICU for 5 months and then she passed away. Mm-hmm. And so they'd never really had a family picture taken with their other daughter. They'd had a couple informal taken in the NICU with all four of them. And one of my friends suggested that we get a drawing done, one of those custom drawings of their family. Yeah. And I actually know a lady who does a great job with those, and she drew a portrait. So we gave her a family picture of them, the three of them, and then we gave her a picture of their baby, and she added the baby, and it turned out so beautiful, and they loved it, and it's framed in their home. And I thought, what a creative, sensitive, thoughtful gift that my friend suggested. So I thought Absolutely. That was a great one. And then what is your third takeaway?
So the third thing that I always want to remind people is just to be sensitive. Just speak with sensitivity and also be sensitive to the reactions of the person who's grieving. We don't always know what will trigger someone's emotions. Sometimes we say nothing because we're so scared of triggering those emotions, but we don't necessarily want to tiptoe. Like I said, like, it's good to ask how someone is doing. It's good to mention the deceased by name. But if by chance there's a strong reaction, it's also good to, instead of getting offended, like, well, I don't know why she's reacting so strongly. It's been 6 months, or, to just understand that those reactions can't always be controlled. And it can go a long way to just, let the dust settle and just reach out and just say, I am so sorry. I had no idea that that would trigger something. And, just some simple examples of things that I've had happen in my life. One thing that's always sensitive is just anytime someone asks me, how many children do you have?
Right.
And it's such an innocent question, right? Like, we ask that of people all the time when we're getting to know people. And I didn't know how to answer. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time. I always felt that whatever I said was just unclear. Either I would say, now I have five. So I'd say I have five. And then people would see me with four children and they'd be really confused. So I've started saying, I say four plus an angel, usually, if someone asks, because I need to be honest and I need to honor Daphne and I can't leave her out because it hurts too much.
Right.
And so that's how I have addressed that, but it can be really difficult when you're first dealing with that. And so what I've learned to say in all situations, because it applies in so many other situations, including situations where there's divorce, or situations where, a spouse has passed away, or other kinds of complicated family situations, I've just learned to say, tell me about yourself, or tell me about your family. Everyone has a family, whether that's their parental family, or their children, or even just their community, right? Mm-hmm. So those two phrases work a little bit more generically, and I've used those more, and I think it helps to allow people to tell you as much as they want to tell you.
Right. And I feel like that is a huge light bulb that I got from you as we discussed and prepared for this podcast, when you said just that switch from how many children do you have to instead saying, tell me about your family. I'm like, yes, because I've struggled with that too, because several times I've asked someone, how many children do you have? And they've answered that they've lost a child, and they kind of stumble over their words. And then I don't know if I should ask more about that or if they don't want mm-hmm. to talk about it. And so it creates a situation where I'm hoping that I haven't put them in an awkward place, but I'm feeling right. awkward. But like you said, if I just say, tell me about your family, then it's totally in their court if they would like mm-hmm. to tell me or not and how much right. they want to discuss. So I love that. I'm going to be using that from right. now on. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this and such personal insight. I was wondering if you could share just one maybe of your favorite moments with Daphne. I didn't tell you this in advance, so this is kind of putting you on the spot, but just so people can get a little taste of her before we end.
Sure. So I think that I have a lot of little memories with her, but I mean, she was so little, so we just spent a lot of time just snuggling. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe my favorite memory is the first moment that I saw her, because Daphne was adopted and she was born in Alabama and I live in Utah. So I actually flew there by myself without my husband. He stayed here with my other daughter, and I flew there and got there in the middle of the night, and I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know if the hospital was expecting me. I didn't know I didn't know anything. I didn't know where I was going. I had an address to a hospital and I had to catch a cab by myself. And it was just a really anxious period of time for me. And then I got to the hospital. It was around 10 p.m. and the nurse took me into Daphne's room, and she was there in just a little, it was the cardiothoracic NICU, and she was in a little incubator. And it was closed, and I walked up next to her, and I just kind of had my hands kind of like grasped in front of me. And she was just so tiny. She was just barely over 4 pounds. Wow. And she was just so little, and I just loved her. My heart just like swelled up so full. And, you know, I'd had confirmation before we adopted her that she was my baby, but then seeing her just there, I just got this just energy surge that was just like, this is your daughter. And I was just so anxious. I'm like, I don't know. Do I get to hold her? What do I do? And the nurse was just so kind. She just put her hand on my back and just said, would you like to hold her? Mm. And, you know, of course I did. And I, you know, I sat in this rocking chair and I held her, and I held her until like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the nurse, she came to me and she was like, I can't let you fall asleep with her. I have to put her back in her bed. But it was just so beautiful to have that. And, you know, the nurse was kind enough to take some photos of that time. And so I have photos of that first time that I held her, and it was just so powerful to feel mm-hmm. so much love and so connected to a little human that I hadn't carried, I hadn't spent any time with, and yet being with her, I knew 100% that she was meant for my life.
That's just beautiful. Really powerful. Yes, that's beautiful. And it's like I said in the introduction, like, grief is big because love is big. And, but you wouldn't trade the love, you know, no. so, mm-mm. so you just have to walk through it with grief. And it's so helpful when you have people around you who know how to support you and reach out to you and love you. And so I know this podcast is going to be a big help to people, to help them to do that better for their family members who've lost loved ones and friends. So can you share with us again, those 3 takeaways of how we can support our loved ones who are grieving?
Yes. The first one is to reach out. No matter how long it's been, just reach out. The second one is to offer a specific service, just something that is related to your talents. And then the third one is to speak with sensitivity and just realize that grief comes in all forms and you can't always predict people's reactions, but just to be kind and sensitive.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And I know people are going to want to follow you and know more of your story. And they can find you on Instagram under the handle Rachel Rebuilt. And there's an underscore in there. RACHEL_Rebuilt. And your website is the same, right?
Yes, RachelRebuilt.com.
RachelRebuilt.com. So people can find you there. And I hope that you have a great rest of your evening. And thanks again so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So did you just fall in love with Rachel and Daphne while listening to that episode? I know you did. So you need to come find me on 3in30podcast.com or on Instagram at 3in30podcast so you can see pictures of the two of them together. And I'm also going to share the drawing that we had done for our friend who lost a baby and the information of the artist who did that drawing. So you can find that as well there. There were so many fantastic ideas in this episode. It makes you want to stop and take notes while you're listening. But you do not have to do that because, as I've mentioned on other episodes, I am going to put together a PDF every month, a one-page PDF with a recap of all of the takeaways from the previous month's episodes. So to get that, just go to my website, 3in30podcast.com, and there's a space there for you to enter your email, and then you'll just get one email a month from me with the one-page printable that has specific details from each episode and the three takeaways. I love this topic. It's so important to me with the passing of my mother and with the passing of Katie, Noah's birth mother, just a few months ago. It's so important, and I hope that many of you will find these suggestions helpful as you support those in your own life who may be hurting. Keep doing great work in your homes, moms, and I hope you have a fabulous week with your families.